It's House File 3483. That's Tim Hoppe. Could you come up? And we're going to be laying your bill over for possible inclusion.
That's what I understand, Mr. Chair.
And I'll just lay it out. What I'm planning on doing is, if we're going to progress the bill, is between now and the time that the Game and Fish bill is heard in the Finance Committee, we'll get an amendment drafted to get the bill in the shape we want it in when we get to Finance, and we'll amend it. If we do it, we'll amend it on in the Finance Committee as an amendment to the existing bill.
Okay. Sounds fair, Mr. Chair.
And so go ahead and explain the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, thank you for letting us be here. And I will, we have Mr. Kelleher here with the Deer Hunters Association. I'll let him give the explanation, if that's okay.
Certainly.
For the record.
Mr. Chairman, good afternoon. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here from the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. Glad to just make the meeting on time. For the past 2 or 3 years, the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association has been very interested in raising the restitution fines for poaching, hunting deer out of season or in season with the wrong tags, wrong license, so on and so forth. To my knowledge, since 1989, the fines for restitution for illegally taking deer, does or bucks, has not been changed. I believe the fine is $500 for a doe and $1,000 for a non-trophy buck, and then there is some sort of restitution capacity above that, which I'm not super familiar with because I couldn't really find it in law, Mr. Chairman, in regards to what is the escalating factors. I know Mr. Cornish is on your committee, and maybe he can regale us with some of those sort of nuances in regards to the fines. I know that about 6-8 years ago, former Representative Bill Haas did a gross violations bill for basically the bill was about fishing over limits. There was a component of restitution for deer, but we felt it was not appropriate, given that in some circumstances, and I have not been able to find this, Mr. Chairman, examples of deer trophy. Happy, help me with the term of art here. Trophy mounts are going for tens of thousands of dollars. So there is an incentive both to poach for the profit, as well as there's an incentive to poach to say that I took that deer legally. So it's sort of a component of both. I know from some of the phone calls that I've received today that the Department of Natural Resources Enforcement Division is not comfortable with the current level of fines that we've proposed. Felt that maybe they were too high for some legislators to get their arms around, that they were too draconian, too stiff. I think Representative Hoppe's bill goes from $1,000 for a the most minimal trophy buck. I think it's 120 points or less from the Boone and Crockett score. Thank you.
All the way up to
$25,000. I've sort of, Mr. Chairman Dill, I've given to you sort of a marked up document that I suppose that from the deer hunter's perspective, we're willing to take as much increase in the fines as we can get out of the legislature. And I know the bill that Representative Hoppe has put forward has caused a couple of members to go, those are pretty draconian fines, those are very steep. But at the same time, you want a certain level of deterrent to where people in their hometowns and their townships and in the local taverns going, wow, my buddy got caught poaching and it cost him $5,000. I don't think any of us should be doing that. As well as some sort of punitive restitution for I got caught and you don't want to ever have to do that again. You should not do it. So it's both sort of both ends of the judicial scale. It's both punitive in regards to restitution and as regards to a deterrent to, you know, it gets around the campfire, it gets around the community that you really shouldn't be poaching deer because it's an expensive violation. And I think that, as a closing note, the state of Minnesota values its deer herd very highly. In 1997, the state of Minnesota spent an extra $1 million a year just to feed the deer so they didn't starve in the winter. They are a huge part of the economy and a huge part of the social fabric of Minnesota, at least from September to December.
Well, I think that the that the hunters paid to feed the deer. There's a surcharge on the license, as I recall, that goes into a deer feeding account, as I recall.
And if it still does, it never was a $1.
$1, I thought it was originally. Not that I'm condoning this, But so a family is starving, and the dad or kids or mom shoots a deer so they can eat. What happens to them?
Mr. Chair, I spent this weekend all day Saturday and part of the day Sunday at our deer cabin with my group cutting wood and getting ready for the season. And when we were done removing a lot of, no, we weren't poaching this weekend. We talked about this issue, and two of the guys separately brought that up and said, hey, you know, I know some people and times are tough, and you know, a guy will go out in the back of his land and, you know, hypothetically shoot a doe to put meat in the freezer. And I can't, I'm not a CO, and Representative Cornish might respond to this. I don't think they're looking for that guy. I think they're more concerned, and this bill is more concerned with the guy that's going out there and shooting the big giant 8-pointer or 10-pointer, cutting the head off and leaving the whole body to rot. I mean, they're doing this. Typically, people that are poaching and that this bill would apply to are people that are looking at just doing this for the trophy value.
Well, let's hear from Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chairman?
He didn't come up here anyway, so let's get him up here and get him in the middle of this.
Can I make one more comment before Smith or Ed Box comes down? We are primarily, if not only the way the bill is drafted, increasing the fines for trophy bucks. The ones that are in all the pictures, the ones that generated the latest group of stories, someone with the giant horns, the ones that, you know, people spend half a decade tracking down in their three-county area to hunt, and then some quote-unquote slob hunter comes by and just takes care of it. I hope that's a different conversation. So primarily, we are not talking about a person who's in need of meat or camp meat and takes a small doe. That's not the the prevalence of this violation of law. The prevalence of what's going on is the big bucks with the big horns.
I think that the committee gets that part of it. I'm wondering to know what technically does this bill do to change anything and the way enforcement is carried out today. Could you give us some of your thoughts on this? And go ahead and you can editorialize on the bill as well since you're here if you like.
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, Major Rodman Smith, DNR Enforcement Operations Manager. And just for the record, the legislature in 97A-345 gave the authority to the commissioner to prescribe rules on the restitution value for animals. So those restitution values are found in 6133. And the restitution value for a white-tailed deer is $500. And it is $1,000 for a white-tailed deer that is considered a trophy. And a trophy is considered a deer that would score a 135 or greater for Boone and Crockett. And a 165 for a non-typical. So the typical would be 135, and non-typical is about 165. Remember off the top of my head. So just to clarify that point for this body. looking at the bill as presented, there's some consequences that some of them may be unattended raising the restitution value, especially on the lower end. The line 1.23 has a restitution value of a score of 100 to 120. I talked with Mr. Cornicelli, our big game manager, today, and he thought that a deer that would score in that area would probably be about a two-year-old deer in this state, so you're not talking a deer that's very old. Raising that value from $500 to $1,001 puts that act in a whole different light in a lot of different statutes. A lot of the game and fish statutes are kind of melded together, and we use $500 restitution as or more, $500 or more on restitution, and that triggers a lot of different things. And once we start making the restitution over $500 on something, there are some unintended consequences. If you want me to run through a few of those, Mr. Chair, I can do that.
If you would, please.
Okay. With our gross over limit law, anything that has a restitution value of over $500 would enact an immediate seizure of license. So somebody that, let's say, shot a 100-class deer from the road, okay? Or they, let's just say they failed to tag a deer, and they were found in violation of not tagging their deer, and the restitution value was $1,001, this could be considered a part of that gross misdemeanor, or the gross over limit language, there'd be immediate seizure of the license with the dollar amount of that much. It also would, with the $500, something that has a restitution value of over $500, under 97A225 under prosecutions, subdivision 5, it talks about joint and several liability. So it would trigger anything over $500 of restitution. For example, if myself and a hunting partner were hunting together and we had a non-tagging violation, or where we didn't tag our deer, and somehow you could show that the two people acted in concert not to tag that deer, they could both be charged for that crime, where right now they wouldn't be able to because it'd be a value under $500. Okay. Let's see. Also, anything that has a restitution value of over $1,000 would be considered a gross misdemeanor. So when it comes to the under 97A338 gross over limits of wild animals penalties, if you don't mind me, I'll just read this. It'll make it a lot easier. A person who takes, possesses, or transports wild animals over the legal limit in closed season or without a valid license when the restitution value is over $1,000 is guilty of a gross misdemeanor. So you're putting somebody that would normally not be a gross misdemeanor into the gross misdemeanor category. Also,
that's the way the bill is currently drafted.
The way it's currently drafted, yes, Mr. Chair. And I did try to connect today with MDHA, and I wasn't able to connect with them. But I'm just telling you the way it is currently drafted because I haven't seen any amendments or anything. A couple other issues. When you get into seizure of licenses and revocations, a person that has a restitution value of over $500, they would also be subject to a 3-year revocation under one instance. So once again, if I go back to a failure to tag a deer and that restitution is over $500, they'd have a 3-year revocation for big game. And that also kicks into the wildlife compact we have with the other states. So not only would they be revoked in Minnesota for 3 years for taking big game, but they would be revoked in those other 20-some states that are part of that wildlife violators compact. No, just for big game. So to answer the point also, Mr. Chair, about the when we get into the bigger dollar amounts for restitution, this body did write into game and fish law the ability for judges to at sentencing look at the ability for a person to pay, and under 97A341 sub 3 under sentencing procedure, the court may consider the economic circumstances of a person and in lieu of monetary restitution order the person to perform conservation work representing the amount of the restitution that would aid in the promulgation of wild animals. So there is some safeguards built in for the person that would get the, if you look at the grossest of cases where, let's say somebody did get the $20,000 fine, the judge can at sentencing, or the prosecutor at sentencing, excuse me, the judge, look at the economic factors and count that in. So I just wanted to give you both sides of that picture so you have a little better understanding. But when we start moving that restitution value, you can see there's a lot of things, and I may have missed a few, but these are just some of the ones I had off the top of my head here that early this afternoon. There are some nuances that we might want to be consider before going hard and fast. So,
Representative McClure.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Major.
Yeah,
Major. I have a license. I shoot a deer. I drag it out of the woods, and I put it up on my truck. I haven't tagged it yet. It scores over 180. I could now be a felon under this law?
Well, if you Mr. Chair, Representative Hackbarth, for sure you'd be a gross misdemeanor. But I guess I didn't look at the restitution value as to whether or not somebody could act potentially be a felon. Is that what you're getting
Mr.
at?
Chairman, yes, it is. And, Mr. Okay. Chairman, I believe that's what the judge goes by when you're charged with a particular crime is what the value of the fine or fee is, whether you're going to be a petty misdemeanor, gross misdemeanor, etc. And, Mr. Chairman, to Mr. Kelleher, this is Minnesota Deer Hunters Association brought this forward to turn people into criminals for these kinds of offenses.
Killer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, I think after all the years of listening to Representative Cornish and Colonel Smith's predecessors, that in your example of you've shot a trophy buck, you've put it on your truck, you have a tag in your pocket or at your house, I don't think, given all the examples I've heard over the years, you're going to be charged as a felon. However, I certainly understand your point. To Colonel Smith's fifth point, which is about the judges, I think part of the reason, and yes, Representative Hackbarth, the Deer Hunters Association has brought this bill forward. We have had a bill similar to this floating around for the last 2 or 3 years. I think, and I didn't bring pictures for everybody, but we're talking about the examples of random non-hunters who aren't hunting, primarily out of season. I mean, if the committee preferred to make a distinction between hunting in season improperly, you know, with a spoiled license, spoiled tag, so on and so forth, versus it's August and you're deer hunting illegally, we think those are two different things. And Representative Hackbarth, if you give me just a second, I'm going to get around to your question while I sort of respond to Colonel Smith's comments. I think the first comment was anything over $500 is a seizure of license. I don't think the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association has any problem with seizing a gentleman's person's license for hunting out of season or hunting inappropriately, poaching. That's what we're calling it. I was unfamiliar with the joint and several liability. I think that's an issue that this committee doesn't really want to get into, and I don't want to go to Representative Atkins' committee or the Judiciary Committee to talk about that. I don't think it's quite the joint and several liability in regards to all the other sorts of things that have been discussed around the Capitol in regards to that term. Being guilty of gross misdemeanor in regards to this new fine schedule, we did propose that, and we are proposing to have people become a gross misdemeanor for hunting out of season, for poaching. It is something that the state has already determined is illegal. It's a question, as I said earlier, is this going to be a deterrent or is it going to be a punitive punishment? Hopefully it's both. The 3-year revocation for having your hunting license revoked for hunting out of season or poaching, I don't think my association, the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, has any problem with that. Quite frankly, I think we would, that's why I asked Colonel Smith, the sort of whisper on the side, I think we would prefer that they would have their fishing licenses revoked as well. And I think we should check, because I think some of the state compacts that Minnesota's a part of, if you've been in violation of game or fish laws, I think you do lose your ability to hunt or fish in other states and maybe a Canadian province. That I'm not so sure of. Maybe that's something the committee council can check. I mean, that's sort of the gist of it. And Representative Hackbarth, I apologize if that was the long way around the boat to answer your question. But yes, we are proposing this. I think it is a problem, and it's a growing problem. Colonel Smith actually has one of our petitions. This is Representative Hoppe's, one of our copies of petitions. Recently, we were, Mark Johnson, from the executive director of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, was at the Deer Classic. And we asked a whole bunch of people who walked by our booth whether they think that the poaching fines should be increased, that the restitution for poaching, hunting illegal out of season, should be increased. And I think Representative Hoppe had a bunch delivered to their office. I didn't personally count them, but there are lots. I don't think there were many people who were saying, no, we should keep the current level of fines as they are.
Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, Mr. Kelleher, that's fine, but you didn't bring a bill to do that. You brought a bill that goes way beyond that. You didn't bring a bill that talks about poaching. You brought a bill that somebody could accidentally get charged for a gross misdemeanor, in your opinion, a felony, in my opinion, by a judge's point of view, I would think, by accidentally putting a deer on the back of their truck and forgetting the tag. I mean, you drag a deer out of the woods, maybe a half a mile or even a mile, at you and your buddy, and you're pretty wiped out. And you get out there and you throw the thing on the back of the tailgate of the truck, and if somebody's standing there watching you, a conservation officer, you can get nailed. You're reaching in your pocket, you're going to put the tag on now, but you're going to get nailed for transporting that deer. You can get a ticket for that. So what you're telling me, Mr. Kelleher, is that that's what's going to happen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, in regards to the judges, it's my understanding that way more often than not, the judges deviate downwardly from the suggested fines. I mean, that would be something that we discussed putting into the bill to not allow the judges to downward deviate from what is current law in regards to the fines, but they do. It's the right of the judiciary to do so. If you're talking about the difference between, I think in your example, we worked on the Minnesota Journalists Association worked a number of years ago about sight tagging and being able to not tag the deer at the site of the kill, which I think is sort of some of your example. The DNR and the conservation enforcement officers fought that very heavily. So I'm not sure that your example about not tagging at the site of your truck where you legally had a license and you legally had a tag, you just didn't have it on you, is not going to be a circumstance for a felony conviction, in my opinion.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Hackbarth,
it was certainly the case with me because this happened to me. And it was the case for a misdemeanor, which is also a very serious offense, is a misdemeanor. And that's what it is. That's what it currently is a misdemeanor. And you're right. I did call the judge, and they did reduce it to a petty misdemeanor. I paid the fine and it was reduced to a petty misdemeanor. But the issue here is this is much, much more stronger. And you didn't bring a bill only for poaching. If it's poaching you want to get at, then let's do a bill for poaching. Not for the scenarios I'm talking about. I give you one example. There are other examples where this could happen. Maybe shoot a little bit too late in a concert in the evening, and you get a trophy buck, and a conservation officer sees this, and he can tag you. I mean, there's a number of different scenarios out there where this could take place. Bring a bill for poaching, if that's what you want. And that's what the examples you were giving. But you didn't bring a bill for poaching.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hackbarth, I think this can be resolved a couple of different ways, and since the Deer Hunters Association is interested in making some change and some improvement in regards to the restitution values, I mean, I can't sit here today and say that we would wholeheartedly agree to make this, you know, these fines apply to outside the season only, so that they would be not from September 1st through December 31st, and talk about just poaching and illegally hunting out of season. However, I think there are lots of examples of people hunting during the season illegally, without a lot of sanction by the government to make it so that they don't. And I think that's part of the problem, that people willfully are doing this, and they don't think there's a lot of recourse for having done it. And I think you set the example that the judges reduce these fines quite regularly.
Representative Cornish.
I actually hesitate to get into this whole fray because from the start of this, not one single person has come to talk to me about it. Enforcement, wildlife, DNR, the Deer Hunters Association. I hadn't heard spit about the whole thing, and yet my name is mentioned twice during the committee proceedings, so I don't know why I should try to clean this mess up. But I think we're talking about two things here, restitutions and fine. I don't think restitution has any bearing on the charge, so I don't think a high restitution makes it a felony. The fine has to do more with the degrees of offense, like misdemeanors, whatever it is now, 750 or gross 3,000, and felonies 5,000 and up. That's fines. We're talking about restitution, so I don't think there's a conflict there. And you've always lost your license for the illegal taking of a big game animal for 3 years, whether it's shining at night or, I think, over limit. And illegal transportation, I think, is a gross misdemeanor. But I see the same complications here. They could have made it a much more simple bill and just said poaching a trophy deer is really serious and up the administrative penalty and left it at that. But it seems like it's really complicated right now and hard to sort through. So, but if you would have stopped by the office and talked about it earlier in the year, it would have been fun. I think the DNR is still mad at me.
kill her.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Cornish, just real fast. I think in one of the drive-bys I did by your office, we did discuss this quickly, but I did not have it in bill form at the time. You know, as I said, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we're very interested in having this activity stop. I don't think anything that the legislature is going to do is necessarily going to do that. However, some awareness, some publicity, some discussion, a couple of people being overly adjudicated by the law for violating this sorts of penalty, I think will go a long way to stop this activity. And I think that's sort of what we're talking about. But if the committee has a druthers to make this for poaching, I don't know how you determine poaching in season and poaching out of season, but there is a distinction. And as I said, the Deer Hunters Association would be willing to move anything forward that would stop this activity.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hoppe, I appreciate you bringing it forward because, you know, the example just south of me where the guy shot that eight-pointer, you know, in the end he may have shot it with a high-powered rifle in October. It's the kind of stuff. But I guess my concern, Mr. Geller, Representative Hackbar touched on one of them, but you got issues about shooting across improved roads, definition of improved roads. My watch says it's 514. The game warden's watch says it's 517, and it closes at 515. You know, the height of deer stand, unless we've got a proposal to change current law. But currently, you poached a deer if you shot it 1 minute after sunset or you shot it with a high-powered rifle in October. That's just as illegal, and I think that's the point. There's a big difference between shooting a trophy in Goodhue County with a high-powered rifle in the dark, which may have all been what happened. That's a completely different scenario than we've tried, and we've changed the laws so much. Today, Representative Hackbar talked about it's changed now. You actually are legal until you lifted the deer up on the tailgate. You could be legal. You could have tagged it back at the site, tracked it, and you could have lost the tag on the way out, which I've had happen. And now what do you do? All of a sudden, hopefully it's not your last tag in your party because you can't even load the deer then. I mean, those would all be situations if the game warden pulled up in, and what if it was a trophy? I think those are just some of the things that we need to talk about. The person shooting a trophy deer clearly illegally is bad news, absolutely bad news. But truthfully, a lot of them. I mean, when you've got the major here telling us he's got problems with the fact that it might go too far, I'm sorry. I think Cornish would tell you that usually they're not the ones telling us we're going too far. They're telling us to throw the book at the guy. He's got an illegal deer, you know, and here he's saying, whoa, it might be a little bit. Sure, if we ask our constituents, should they go after that guy in Goodhue County? Absolutely. But that's not necessarily who we may be going after, somebody making a mistake or, truthfully, might be argumentative. Was it 512 or 517 when it was 515? It could be whatever that guy's name is up there that's overzealous. You know,
I might get one chance to mention my extremely efficient conservation officer one more time this session. And plus, he's retiring soon. So this might be my very last chance to say that. Anyway, Mr. Kelleher.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, we very much understand the point of catching people who unintentionally were violating the law that might get caught up in this proposal to increased restitution fines for trophies. Off the top of my head, and I think Mr. Bacchus is here, I think a little more than half of all the deer harvested in each season are does. I think we have to talk about the distinction of how many people are going to get in this sort of situation. And I think, as Representative Dill has stated, this is sort of an informational hearing to sort of address the committee's concerns in regards to this bill as the way it's currently drafted. I don't think that we are wedded to this particular proposal. However, I think it is a start. I don't know where. We would be willing to listen to any other sort of proposals in regards to talking about poaching and those sorts of things, specifically poaching incidences. And I think, quite frankly, and I'll say this, and then I'll be done, Mr. Chairman, The in regards to the comments of the conservation, the colonel, who I suppose is speaking on behalf of all the COs in the department, we felt that this should be the department's bill in the first place, not necessarily ours. And for them to come in and say that this might be too much, I've been here 20 years. It's rare for an enforcement body to come in and say that's too much authority. We don't want that. Or the fines are too high. So quite frankly, we're very willing to listen to anything that the committee is looking at, and we will try to look at something that is maybe more poaching-oriented and less random hunter caught in the crossfire of some legislation to stop the acts of poaching.
Representative Cornish.
Well, for the first or second time this year, I want to rise in defense of the DNR enforcement, for good Lord. I mean, that's their job to tell them if it's too tough or not too tough, and I think Representative Dill would rather have them come in and say that's too tough than ask for more. And I mean, this bill should have originated with enforcement and DNR and got the input right from the groundwork up and got some good advice, but if something happened here, it's to blame enforcement to come in and give an opinion that it's too much. I mean, they're the one that's going to catch hell out in the field, like our very efficient conservation officer, if it's too much, so they better say something now.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, going back to the comment that was made earlier about Representative Haas, when we changed the over limit, and what happened is there were people, all the stories were about people from out of state that were a resort that were, you know, leaving with a trailer full of walleyes and things like that. And I think what happened is we recognized that there was a need, and we listened to people, and we had to make some changes. I think we're starting to hear more and more of these stories about people illegally taking the big giant deer, and I'm not hearing anything about people taking a doe or anything like that. And I don't want to have a bill that's going to get an honest deer hunter in trouble who's, you know, watch is a little slow or whatever it is. So, Mr. Chair, if it's okay, if we can still lay this over and get together with Mr. Kelleher and Representative Cornish and see if we can figure out an amendment that addresses poaching and, you know, leaves the honest guys alone and work with enforcement and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, our plan is to lay the bill over regardless. Anybody in the audience for or against the bill? Being none, we'll lay the bill over. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, member.
And House File 3483. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. 3722. That's Representative Hackford. Yes. And while we're waiting for Representative Hackbarth, Representative Cornish, can you move the minutes of March 15th?
I moved the minutes of March. What did you say?
March
15th.
15. Any additions or corrections? Being none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes have been adopted. Thank you, Representative Saylor, for chairing that meeting while I was sick as a dog that day.
Are you plugging?
No.
Representative Hackbarth.
He's over there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 3722 is a pilot program for a walk-in hunter access program. As many of you may know, I've been a champion of trying to create a walk-in access program in the state of Minnesota for quite some time. When I was carrying the Heritage Bill, it was actually part of the constitutional amendment Heritage Bill that we would have money from that paying for a walk-in access program. What we have here today, though, is a pilot project that a bill that would create a pilot project that was put together with the DNR and a group of sportsmen and farm groups as a result of them coming together and looking at this report that was done in 2008, I believe.
Yes.
That the DNR did that was requested by the legislature to put together. So they got together and they came together and they came up with this proposal as a pilot project just to try to get something done so we can get our feet on the ground and get something moving. Colin Peterson has money in the farm bill, and that's been appropriated, and we can have access to that if we have something in place in the state of Minnesota to help us get this up and running. And my ideal vision of making this work would be to connect it with some of the other programs that we already have in the state of Minnesota, such as CREP and RIM and CRP, those kinds of things that are already in place that farmers are participating in. And we are not guaranteed access. The public's not guaranteed access to hunt on those kinds of lands. These are good hunting lands. And this would give the farmers a little more incentive to let the public come in and have access to that property and hunt on those properties. So that pretty much explains the bill as from my perspective, Mr. Chairman, and I know I did not talk to the committee administrator or you, Mr. Chairman, about bringing the DNR forward or having anybody else testify, but we just met briefly in my office just before coming down here, and if you would allow us to let the DNR just give a little five-minute explanation of how we got to this point with this bill.
That would be fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Introduce yourself. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Penning. I'm the Farmland Wildlife Program Leader with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. As the representative mentioned, in 2008, we wrote a report to the legislature called the Access to Minnesota Outdoors Plan, and we primarily focused on farmland for that because when we talk to folks about where they want access, when we talk to hunters, they're thinking about access programs like there are in the Dakotas, and they're primarily talking about access to farmland. We've got some pretty good access to our forested portions of the state, but there's still a high demand for access to farmland. And a quick summary of that report, which can be found on the DNR website, is that in generally speaking, western states where land values and rental rates are low, cash rental rates for agricultural land, and ownerships are vast, populations are sparse, they tend to have successful walk-in programs. And eastern states where parcel sizes are small, land prices are high, and populations are greater, they tend to be less successful. We concluded in that report that Minnesota was sort of on the bubble. We didn't know which way it would go in Minnesota, and we didn't think that it was the best idea to jump right in. I'm almost done, so you don't even need to. That's fine, no problem. We didn't think that it was best to jump right in and spend many millions of dollars trying to get an access program going in Minnesota without gathering some information first. So we put together a work group to develop a pilot program, and we included Minnesota Waterfowl Association, Minnesota Farmers Union, Pheasants Forever, a Soil and Water Conservation District, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, QDMA, MDHA, Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance, and Sportsmen's for Change. And our committee had three groups, three meetings, and we tried to come up with what our recommendations would be for a program that would give us a certain amount of information that we could then use to restructure whatever we needed to do in order to have a successful program in Minnesota. And the outline of the program proposal is before you. And basically what we came up with is that we would need to do a two-year pilot program. We would target this at existing conservation lands like CRP and WRP. If it expanded, we might use this to try to leverage additional conservation on the ground through time. But with a two-year pilot program, you can't really even get anything planted and get some huntable habitat within 2 years. So we would target existing programs to start with. We would administer this through the Farmville Assistance Partnership, which is a partnership between DNR, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, Pheasants Forever, and local soil and water conservation districts. For the pilot program, we would target the 16 southwesternmost counties. Assuming that the program was funded into the future, we would expand that throughout the entire farmland. When I'm talking about the 16 southwesternmost counties, I'm talking about the counties south of the Minnesota River and west of Mankato. In the 2 years, our first year target would be 25,000 acres enrolled, and our second year target would be 50,000 acres enrolled. We would propose that this would be for all species, the entire small game season, which is September 1st to the end of February, so that includes other hunting as well. We would have a base payment rate, and this is frankly the tricky part of it because we don't have good data on what it would cost in Minnesota. What we do know is that the programs in North and South Dakota are probably the most similar to what we would see in Minnesota, and North Dakota is paying about $10 an acre, and South Dakota is paying about $6 an acre East River. We think it will be more than that in Minnesota, but we don't have anything to hang our hat on. So we would have a base payment rate of maybe $10 to $15, and then we would add incentive payment rates, for instance, if they signed up for multiple years or agreed to do some additional habitat work, that sort of thing. We would report back after year one, and that would is what's in the legislation right now, and I think that we would have that, consider that to be an interim report, and we'd have better data after year two and could give a more accurate report on what the situation was. Our work group estimated that the total cost for the two-year pilot program would be about $2 million. And I guess with that, my presentation is over. I could answer any questions if anybody had any.
Questions? Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think for Mr. Penning, I'm just wondering, in that cost, which you just left us with of about $2 million, how much of that would be paid for out of the federal matching, and how much, what's the match on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Saylor, that's a good question, actually. The 2008 Farm Bill created a walk-in program. The money is there. There's $50 million until the Farm Bill expires in 3 years, so there'd be about $17 million a year for the first 2 years and 16 the second year, but that's for all the states that have walk-in programs, and it will be competitive. We don't know how much we would get from that. The USDA has yet to write their rules, so we have no idea what the requirements would be in terms of match or anything. I think that there will be a lot of states going for this money. I think we would be lucky if we got $1 million. But that's just a guess because it's all speculation at this point.
And where would the rest of the money come from that isn't federal?
Representative Saylor, the proposal in the bill right now is to take it out of the Game and Fish Fund. And over the long haul, I think we would need to find another source of funding for that. Our constituent groups in the past have told us that they support a walk-in access program as long as it doesn't take away from the DNR's ability to continue to acquire wildlife management areas and to put high-quality habitat on the ground, so that they have clearly stated to us that they want this to be a new source of funding. So over the next couple of years, at the end of the pilot program, we'd be looking at trying to generate something, probably an endorsement on a hunting license.
Representative Backer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Saylor. I was asked not to talk about the financing of that in this particular committee, but that is true. I mean, you have to talk about the finances a little bit of connecting with the policy. And that is true that we would have to access $2 million of the Game and Fish Fund. I believe there's like $8 million sitting on the bottom line in the Game and Fish Fund now that we could access $2 million. But that's absolutely correct. In the long run, after this pilot project's up and running, see how successful it is, I would support increasing hunting licenses, maybe put a surcharge on, have to figure that all out later, but do something to try to fund the program. You know, whether we do it with maybe look at Heritage money, that's a possibility, but I would support putting a surcharge on licenses.
At the risk of asking, Mr. Chair, another financial question in a policy committee, mm-hmm. I'm just curious. When would this start, should this pass, when would it start taking effect, and which budget would it be taking out of? Would it be when we're actually probably working on a $6 billion deficit, or would it be at another time?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Saylor, the money comes from dedicated funds in the Game and Fish Fund, not the general fund, so it doesn't affect anything other than the Game and Fish Fund, so it's dedicated money. And I believe it starts 2011.
I think that's
February of 2011 is when it would start.
Other questions? Representative
McNamara. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Saylor asked my first question about the federal. I really like this, Representative Hackbart and Mr. Penning, the incentives. So one thing I would say, I don't know if you're thinking about it, but you might think that the quality habitat, if somebody had a really choice land, it's going to produce a lot more game and allow for more hunters per acre if they had really good habitat on it. maybe there's some kind of a scoring where you might even have a little further incentive potentially. But I like my first thoughts about being close to existing public opportunities and enlarged tracks and a continuing commitment. I really like the idea of doing this on a pilot because I think people do like it. And in the Dakotas, if I'm not mistaken, I know South Dakota, we have a fee that we pay. It's a couple bucks or something. And
13.
When you add it on all the licenses in a hurry, you can generate a significant amount of money. So it's a good deal.
Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To either the witness or Representative Hackbarth, out of curiosity, if you were a farmer enrolled in this program and unfortunately you had some unscrupulous people come in, if they were to do damage to the property, if you had put in whether it's wildlife nesting boxes or if you had pasture land adjacent and you had some fences that suffered damage or other types of damage, what course of recourse does the farmer have access to hopefully solve some of those problems? I mean, I'm assuming that they may not know every person that would come onto the property, but would the state then be liable for those costs, or how would that be addressed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Falk, we have not worked through that yet. What we would propose, and one of the things that we found to be important in other states that have successful walk-in programs, is if a landowner has a really, really bad experience and just wants out, most of the successful programs give them an opt-out within 30 days. They can say, I want out of this thing, and they're out of it within 30 days, and the signs would come down. In terms of reclaiming costs for damaged materials, that we haven't worked through yet. I can't answer that.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Falk, I believe, and maybe the DNR enforcement could answer this question, but I think there's some liability laws already in place that would cover this.
Was your question, part of your question, addressing liability of people being injured on the property in the pursuit of using it under the walk-in program, and how would that be addressed on behalf of the landowner?
If I could answer, Mr. Chair, that was not my question here, but it was more dealing with property damage to the landowners, but I think you do bring up another question, so maybe we could have that answered as well.
So my question is going the other way, Mr.
Chair. Mr. Chair, Minnesota Statute 604 gives a landowner who allows somebody to hunt on their property without charging them the lowest level of liability that we have in this state. We would propose a statutory change to that subdivision 7 and change that so that it would say land enrolled in a state walk-in access program is deemed for these purposes to be land that an owner has made available without charge for recreational purposes. Thus, they would be, if they were enrolled in a state program, they would be at that lowest level of liability.
And Mr. Chairman, that in my original bill, that is in my original bill.
It's in there.
Okay, other questions by the committee? From the audience, anyone to testify for or against the bill? Mr. Peterson, come on down.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'll keep it kind of short because I've done this before. But Farmers Union, we did take a position opposing a walk-in program, and we've been meeting with our members and still talking about it. And most of our members are still have concerns about it, but I think that and so we'll stay opposed to it. But I do appreciate that it's a pilot scale. And also one other thing, you know, in thinking through some of the issues of it is that, as Representative Falk asked, some of the issues haven't been defined yet. So if I hope that farm groups, if the bill passes, are involved in the talks as we go forward, because just even saying liability, we need the statutory change. So Representative Saylor is asking, when would it go into effect? So you'd have to pass that either this year or next year before so that the liability was in place. So you'd have to pass that in 2011. I was just thinking, and get that through before I think a lot of landowners would have comfort on that. Other issues we still have, you talked a little bit about who's going to run the program, and it's interesting to hear them say that, but we also, you know, have a lot of questions about who's going to enforce the program and how that's going to go, you know, and so is the DNR, are they ready to, you know, we're using the COs or conservation officers, because that's what we get a lot from our members when we're asking about this, is they say, you know, what if my neighbor puts it in, I don't want it in, and, you know, they're wandering onto my property, and I continue to have problems with that. But those are, I think, some of the details that we could work out if the bill goes forward. But I think that's the real concern we have. I have livestock. Keep in mind, Minnesota is a state with 5 million people. The Dakotas have, I don't even know if they have 1 million people. So we do have a lot more people and could have potentially more issues with that. But the concern, again, is that my neighbor puts the land in. I live out there with my farm, my livestock, and my neighbor has got CRP. He lives in the cities, enrolls on. He doesn't even live there technically, but he enrolls, and then I got to deal with the traffic, and then they wander over my property. What's the consequences? Is it a big problem? North Dakota, South Dakota, talked with a lot of our members out there. You know, frankly, they like the program. West of, you know, especially in the western parts of the Dakotas, it works really well, and it's extra income for them. But on some of the eastern parts, that's, you know, it's been an issue sometimes. So I hope that the committee, or the policy committee, that you're looking at enforcement and how that's going to work. One other thing I've heard brought up by some of our members of the bill goes forward too, and looking at, and that, again, that's something on the details that has to work out. And the one good thing about this, I guess, is if it passes, is like I said, they're going to look at it and bring back the recommendations by February 2011. Is a notification to the landowners of that. I've heard some other legislators say that there should be some kind of notification in here that people are going to hunt there, or they got to check in with you, and we've talked about that before. So leave it at that. Opposed to the bill, but continue to work on it as we go forward. So thank you.
Question.
Well, just real quick, Mr. Peterson, I would imagine if you're opposed to this bill, then you're just opposed to any walk in, no matter what it is. I mean, this is not cropland. This is set aside land. So you just don't like the idea of paying farmers an extra chance to make some more money on a government program already.
Mr. Chairman and Representative McNamara, until we see a little bit more of the details and put together the details, I think that's fair. But I'll say, as the bill passes, and I'll say I'm here and I've been looking at it and working on it, I feel comfortable. We have a meeting in southwest Minnesota tomorrow with our farmers. I've been down into Cottonwood, Nobles. I've traveled those counties, talked with the farmers in there. And until they see some of the details on the questions, they do have concerns about it, and I feel very comfortable about that. Even on the CRP land, again, you know, what happens, as Representative Falk mentioned, when I have a problem on there. But I will say, too, that the reason we'll keep working on it is that a couple things have changed. I mentioned that in my last testimony, and that's why we want to keep visiting with our farmers. Is the money was included in the Farm Bill. And I'd mentioned, I know we talked about funding, is that, you know, I think our members, in talking about it, are interested in using some of the heritage dollars for this. If we're going to piggyback it on CRP rates and everything, that could be a real bonus. And that's one thing we want to ask our members about, too, is that, you know, sometimes CRP rates, other rates for putting some land in, isn't quite comparable, especially if you get $7 corn or something. But, you know, if you stack this on top and a couple other things, carbon credits, who knows what, it could be really good. So I just want to, you know, make that clear, and continuing to try to work on it and see what happens. But again, not all the details are out there. So,
anyone else? Okay, he's adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.